Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Surf Splendor. I'm your host, David Scales. I will keep this introduction short and sweet, as there's a few listener emails and that sort of thing that I would like to read, but I think I'm going to read them during the show with Scott so that he can hear them too. So I'll just keep this strictly business. Follow us on social media at Surf Splendor. Our website is surfsplendorpodcast.com. Leave comments there about any show that you listen to. We've gotten a few comments recently, or quite a few comments recently, actually, with recent shows. Seems to be getting more and more active, that section of the website, as has iTunes with reviews and ratings. That is a real good way to help us grow our show. I'm not sure exactly how they, of iTunes algorithm for how they promote shows. All I know is that if you rate and review ours, it seems to increase listenership. So we encourage you just to rate and review the show if you like it. And thank you for those who have done that recently. And I believe that is all. I will be back at the end of the show to sign us off. But until then, enjoy Surf News with myself and Mr. Scott Bass. Thanks.
Down the line, Surf Talk Radio, Scott Bass and David Scales with you here on February 18th. It's a Wednesday in Southern California, and we're broadcasting from the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center in San Clemente. And David, good morning.
Good morning. I love the pronunciation of February, by the way. That was perfect. It's so uncomfortable to say properly.
Yeah.
I hate saying it correctly.
Yeah.
February. You're looking sharp today, dude.
Oh, thank you.
Got your haircut, got your spectacles on.
Yes, sir.
Got your weird little vest and your button-up shirt.
Weird little Buster Brown vest.
Looking good. I expect this to be the sharpest show that we've ever produced based on the way you came today.
All right.
I told you to bring your A game.
Yeah.
And you did.
I have a meeting later today, so I had to dress for the occasion.
I see. Looking good.
Thank you.
So, dude, yeah. I got some stuff we need to catch up on from our last show.
All right. Well, let's get right into it.
You want to get right into it?
Yeah, let's get right into it.
Catch up stuff.
Down the line, Surf Talk Radio. We're getting right into it.
So I did an episode last week with Tori Meister. I don't know if you know, he ruptured his spleen at Backdoor in November, took off on a wave at Backdoor, like a massive, like double overhead set wave, kind of free fall dropped, landed on his stomach and like a massive belly flop basically, and it ruptured his spleen. He went in, people die from it, from bleeding to death, and he got it all sorted out. But in the show, we weren't sure what his ultimate prognosis was going to be, if he was going to have to get surgery or whatever. After we recorded the show, he went to the doctor after, like, for a 2-month checkup, and it turns out he got the green light to surf. So he'll be back on the QS this season. I think the Trestles event will be his first event. He's been in the water a couple times this week and slowly recovering. So I wanted to give people kind of the update on that. Tori will be back in it.
Cool. Well, we wish Tori well. You guys are obviously a red hot surfer. They all are.
I noticed too, we have more downloads for the middle of February, just the last 2 weeks of February, than any month ever previous. So I think that more people are listening.
I think that's because of the Firewire interview that we did. I think that the whole Kelly Slater Firewire thing really...
Did you get a lot of feedback?
Yeah, a lot of people listened to it and a lot of people liked it. So
I noticed after my Chas Smith interview too, and they posted on Beach Grit, that got like a bunch of new downloads.
And so you probably got some follow-through.
And then the very next one was the Firewire. So I was just thinking, considering we have new listeners, maybe we just reset who we are. You're Scott Bass?
Yeah.
Surfer Magazine?
Yeah, I worked at Surfer Magazine for 9 or 10 years, online editorial director there. You know, now I produce the Boardroom Surfboard Show, formerly known as Sacred Craft. And I do some other consumer events, including the Vintage Surf Auction coming up here in Los Angeles in September. And the Boardroom, of course, coming up in May. So that's who I am. I'm a lover of surf, and just like you and all of the listeners. So we're here to chat.
You're early adapter podcast guy, too. I mean, you started the show in 2005, I think, or 2006?
2005.
Coming up on the 10-year anniversary.
10-year anniversary of Surf Talk Radio.
And then I jumped on your coattails about a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Trying to glean some of your glory.
No. You make me sound good. You come prepared, and it's good stuff.
Cool. Speaking of that interview, the Mark Price one, I got an email from somebody who was saying that we need to talk more about surfboards. Actually, it was on surfsplendorpodcast.com. Frazier Cameron Laurie said, I found the talks about the Firewire construction really interesting. Would be cool to hear more about different surfboard constructions, or maybe hear what you and Scott are currently riding. Almost a mini review. Do you guys know anything about the LibTech boards? I know they make amazing snowboards, but don't know much about their waterboards. What are your thoughts on LibTech?
I've actually ridden a LibTech. I rode one in Florida and in the surf.
Okay.
And I also rode one in one of the wave pools in Florida.
Oh, wow.
At Typhoon Lagoon.
Huh.
At Disney World. And I really actually like, I mean, why wouldn't I like it? But they are thinner.
What's the construction?
The construction's sort of, what's the word?
Here we go again.
Proprietary.
Oh, so they don't
reveal
it.
It's a little bit proprietary. Okay. Yeah, they're pretty hush-hush about it. I mean, they'll give you some insight into it, but the most interesting thing about, or what I find most interesting about the LibTech construction is that everything about the board's made in the USA. Like, there's not one part of the board, fins, what, like, it's all done in the USA.
Awesome.
And the mad scientist over there, Mike, who designs the boards, a great surfer and quite a character. And, you know, I'm a believer. I've ridden them and they work good. They're pretty thin, you know, but there's plenty of width and stuff. So there's some guys. I know there's a guy in Huntington Beach, Ryan, who rips on them. There's
Ryan Carlson.
Yeah.
He's a friend of mine. He surfs really well.
Yeah. He's a good surfer.
And are they made out of foam though? Is it poly? You don't even know.
It's definitely got a foam core.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, but what type of foam it is and, you know,
okay.
I should know. You're always putting me on the spot.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, this is what happened with the Firewire thing. I called you out. You had information, but it led to getting Mark on the show. So maybe we do the LibTech episode too. Speaking about, though, that email or that comment on our website, he was asking what boards we ride and maybe a mini review. What are you riding right now?
The board that I'm riding right now, my sort of go-to board and just normal Southern California waves, is a special board. It's called the B-Dog. Wayne Rich shaped me a board that's sort of a wide-tailed quad thing that a wider-tailed quad fin with a beaked nose and sort of a really finely foiled rail. It's a one of a kind. You know, it's not a board that you're going to find anywhere on any racks anywhere. You know,
what size?
5'9". Yeah, 5'9", really fast, responsive. a little bit wider. It's sort of a tweener board, you know. It's okay. Not quite a full fish nose, but it's not a pulled in high performance shortboard nose.
Yeah.
So it's kind of got this tweener vibe, which are generally, I'm against the idea of a tweener board, because you generally get, you know, you go into it going, I'm going to get a little bit of the good out of that and a little bit of the good out of that, but you end up getting neither. But with this board, we knew that going in, and so we did some this is sort of version 3 of it.
And
Wayne just made me this really neat, in fact I'm thinking about taking it to Indo with me to try it out there. But it is a pretty wide tail board. You don't really need a wide tail board in Indo. But
what's the tail shape?
It's like a rounded square.
Okay.
Yeah.
When are you going to Indo?
Sometime in the summer.
Okay. So talking about it's your third version, I think that's something we should point out to listeners too. Hopefully they work with a shaper, or they've worked with a shaper repeatedly, because I mean, that's really where you get your best surfboards from. Off the rack is fine, but once you develop a relationship with a shaper who kind of is intuitive and understands the way you surf and your needs, they can dial in a better product for you, and you're rarely going to hit that home run the first time out of the gates. But man, having a good board is such a magical experience. I actually have gotten one recently, that Roger Hines board. I don't know if we talked about it or not, but it's kind of similar. It's kind of similar to what you're talking about. He has a Roger Hines, kind of this old school North Shore. He's from Southern California, but spent a lot of time on the North Shore, Lightning Bolt and stuff like that. But he's based in Seal Beach, Huntington Beach area. And he makes this board called The Thing Too. And the one that he made for me, or that I have, it's like a 6.0. It's also a quad. The tail's also wide. Sounds pretty similar to what you're talking about. But the tail, it's actually more like a fish type shape, but where it's squared off on the points. Rather than it coming to a point in the tail, it's squared. So it's like, you know what I mean? Like two different, I don't know, like a fish basically, but just squared off. I've seen some Lost boards that are that way. Some of the Tomos are like that. I'm not
they
sure
sort of have
what
fangs almost.
Yeah.
Like fangs at the end of the tail.
Well, no.
And then they go into a round.
Yeah. It's actually a hard edge, like almost a hard corner, not a 90 degree angle.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a quad as well. And I've been loving The Thing, dude. I caught seriously one of the best waves I've caught in a decade at Uppers the other day when we had all that swell. Caught this thing from the outside at Uppers and literally like through the bay, almost to the lower's left. Like it was insane. Probably did like 10 turns on it. Like I actually couldn't even paddle all the way back out. I went into the beach and walked back down to Uppers. It was like the wave of the year for me. And it just like, I fell in love with that board. So I'm psyched on that. But like I said, it really makes all the, like I will go a year surfing, just going through the motions and the ritual of surfing, but not really enjoying it because I'm just on boards that I'm not psyched on. And then you get on one like that and it revitalizes your love of surfing.
Yeah, for sure. Getting psyched on a board, having a board that's got tons of speed to burn and makes surfing fun again. That's, you know, the thing about the Wayne Rich board, I mean, it's 5.9, but it catches waves insane.
Right.
It's really flat rocker.
Right.
And he did some magical stuff so that it's flat and catches waves, but it goes up the wave face vertically, you know, without a problem. Like I look there and the board goes there. That's
right.
Kind of my, you know, when I think about a magic board and what makes a magic board, it's when it goes where I want it to go sort of effortlessly, you know, and generally if you look to that spot on the wave and the board follows you there, that's a good thing, you know, and that's what this board does great. So I'm also riding an 11-foot Mark Andreini.
That
single
glider.
Fin. Yeah, the glider. I've been riding. It's kind of like a Makaha Point big wave glider board, but I've been riding that.
You've had that for a while though, right? I've seen that in your truck and stuff.
Yeah. That board's been around a while.
Well, talking about the flat rocker on your Wayne Rich, this board that Roger gave me, like it had way more rocker than I expected in the nose because it kind of has a fish design elements in it, but the rocker in the nose is pretty substantial. And it bothered me when I was looking at it. I'm like, dude, I don't know if this thing's really going to go. But it works beautifully. I don't know. It paddles incredibly well. It's got plenty of volume to float and to paddle. But that added rocker, I think, helps do what you're talking about, which is get kind of more vertical and fit into the wave face in kind of a tighter arc. But I was expecting it to kind of push water with all that rocker, you know? So I'm not sure. I got to talk to him about that, actually, and figure out what counterpoint design element allows for all the speed and glide.
Well, probably the width yeah. and the tail. And the width and the tail actually really helps you catch waves, too.
Okay.
Because you think about it, you're paddling for the wave, and if you have a wide tail, once the wave starts to pick you up, that wide tail lifts. And when it lifts like that, it pushes you down the wave face. And so the wider the tail, the more lift you're going to get. And if it's a narrower tail, you're not going to get as much lift as the wave starts to.
Right.
So yeah, wide tail, people, a lot of times they attribute, oh, I've got a great paddling board. I don't know what it is with the nose rocker. But a lot of times it's because the board's actually wide in the tail. And that's where you're getting a lot of lift behind the wide point of the board. Getting you into the wave face.
Interesting. Well, I posted a photo of this board on Instagram a week or so ago when I first started riding it. So at Surf Splendor, if you want to see that photo. I got one more email remember we talked about Fergal Smith's Ireland video series that he does?
Yeah.
It's called Growing. His brother, Kev, sent me an email. He goes, hey, I'm from Ireland. I've been listening to the show this winter and loving it, driving up and down the coast. I was stoked to hear you talk about Fergal Smith's Growing series. I'm Ferg's brother and the guy who does all the filming and editing for the web series. It's great to hear you guys support the series. Thanks a lot. Keep up the great work. Look forward to hear the next episode. I thought that cool. was pretty rad.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I've got some insight on the LibTech boards here.
Oh, good.
They are closed cell foam construction.
Okay.
Let's see. It says our exclusive closed cell alloy formula will not absorb water. It's springy like a trampoline, contains up to 50% recycled content and uses ozone friendly blowing agents. So the whole board is quite environmentally friendly as I look over their stuff here.
I remember that being their selling point.
Now. Yeah. They have, instead of the toxic industry standard polyester or epoxy, we use a chemistry that has higher elongation, extreme ding resistance, and responsive rebound. They don't really go into what exactly their boards are made out of.
Sure.
Again, it's proprietary. They just use a lot of marketing lingo, like, you know, this and that. But the boards are all hand constructed in the United States of America, so it's kind of neat.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool, dude. Well, that's all my stuff for catching up from our last show. What do you want to get into?
Let's get into the upcoming Snapper Rocks WSL season. I think everybody's geeked out on that. I know I am. I have picked a team.
I set up a fantasy surf club for this show.
I signed up for it.
You did? Okay.
Yeah,
you
You sent me a request. And so I think you and I are the only members.
Okay. I've never done a club before. I left it public. So I think people, can they just search it and then join?
Yeah.
That's the goal. So Surf Splendor is the title for the club.
So if you want to be in the same fantasy surf club as David and myself, right?
Yeah.
Surf Splendor. Go on to fantasysurfer.com.
Yep.
And click on Surf Splendor. You'll go to public clubhouses, I think, and then do a search there. And my name is Floatergate.
Oh,
so
okay.
If you're wondering, my team name Floatergate.
Oh, so you set up a?
I've had the same team forever. So
a club, though.
No, that's my team.
Your team, got
my
it,
team
got it,
name is Floatergate. So when you go to sign up for it, it's going to ask you for your team name or whatever,
right.
or like my username.
Yeah, my username.
Guess my username.
Just my name.
Yeah, so mine's Floatergate.
Got it.
And I'm also in another great club where we, where there's some money involved, which is a lot of fun.
Mm.
So the Surf Splendor Clubhouse. I've set up down the line surf talk clubhouses in the past, and in fact, there's still one that's floating around out there, but. I don't put as much energy in it because I'm more geeked on this one where there's money, which brings me to my next point.
Okay, let's see.
Which is fantasysurfer.com and the complete failure for them to really kind of upgrade the site, you know? They have an opportunity to do something really neat here. And I've done a little bit of research with some people and they don't sell the site. Like the site's not sold by their sales staff. They're not excited about it. And so they're sort of
missing an opportunity.
Well, and their call is, look, we don't have any money to upgrade it, you know? And what's interesting about that is that fantasy sports have, has sort of gone through a revolution.
Oh, yeah.
And Surfer Magazine and, quite frankly, the WSL are missing the boat. And I have an opportunity, or we have an opportunity in front of us, we being the WSL and whoever wants to run with this idea, to make some money and to actually get the WSL sort of out of its, what we assume to be a fiscal hole, right? It seems...
All the rumors are that it is, yeah.
Yeah. So there's sites like FanDuel.com and DraftKings and Fantasy Score. They've changed the face of fantasy sports. These popular fantasy sites, they pay out big money, David, to you and I, to fans of the sport. They're paying out thousands of dollars every week. And what that does is it gets guys like me viewing the sport that I'm invested in fiscally a lot more. So I'm following my team. I'm following it on my mobile device. I'm following it on Hulu. I'm following it on Facebook. I'm following it because each and every week I can make a lot of money and people are making a lot of money. And this, just in a few short years has really, got the attention of some of the big leagues. The NBA has now joined forces with FanDuel.com.
Wow.
The National Hockey League and Major League Baseball have joined forces with DraftKings.com because they realize, and there's a proven stat that there's 40% more viewership when you have a fiscal investment, a fiscal incentive as a player of these games. It used to be, you know, roto baseball, whatever, you played with your buddies. And, you know, at the end of the season, you know, maybe you got $100.
Right.
You know, I'm talking in 6 months, you know. After each and every game, you're going to make money with these new, basically the speed of the internet, the speed of technology, more devices. They've made it available now so that you can cash in right away. And obviously the bigger pool of money, the more amount of money you can make. So, American sports leagues, which have traditionally sort of shied away from quote-unquote gaming, have now wrapped their hands around this. They see this as a big opportunity for viewership to skyrocket, and it has. Again, the big number that stoked Adam Silver, the commissioner of the NBA, is a 40% increase in viewership.
Yeah.
This is a big deal, and this is where Surfer Magazine and the World Surf League, the WSL, have dropped the ball, that they haven't seen this opportunity, that they haven't upped the ante. And, you know, my take on it is we should be able to make money, you and I, as members of the Down the Line or the Surf Splendor podcast clubhouse, after each round.
Right.
There should be dollars exchanged between you and I. And you know what that's going to do? We're going to be watching.
Oh,
we're going to be totally into it. And we're going to be following stats.
Right.
We're going to be getting heavily invested because the guys that make a lot of money are the stat gurus.
Yeah.
The guys that just play the odds. And these guys are making, there's guys making $500,000 that are just Joe Blow stat guys like you and me sitting on the sidelines with nothing better to do. The day after the announcement that the NBA was joining forces with FanDuel, Adam Silver, the NBA commissioner, came out and said, you know what? We think that gambling probably should be legal in all 50 states. And he basically has gone out of his way to say that the NBA and all of the sports leagues should embrace gambling because it's happening anyway. And why not get a portion of the pie?
Wow.
And that doesn't necessarily mean gambling revenue. It means viewership
revenue
through sponsorships.
Well, there are gambling sites, of course, for surfing. I think based out of Australia and stuff like that. I've never actually participated in
them. There's
a
difference between gambling sites and fantasy sports sites.
Of course.
And there's actually been a lot, within the last 3 months, there's been a lot of discussion amongst anti-gambling groups and the NBA and these other sports commissioners about what's the difference here between fantasy sports and gambling. And the fantasy sports advocates are basically saying, hey, look, guys like David Scales and Scott Bass and people that love surfing, they understand surfing. They're experts. They know that a North Swell at Pipe is going to be better for the right-handers, so they're probably going to pick regular foots. And so what they're saying is the expertise that you and I have and the expertise that the Joe Blow guy that's studied the statistics on what's going to happen in an NFL game or an NBA game, that expertise is what sets us apart from just going, yeah, I want to bet $100 on, you know, Whiskey Red in the eighth race to show.
Yeah.
You know, that's gambling. But this is actually what they call cash for cash business. And this is where the people at Surfer Magazine and the powers that be at the WSL have dropped the ball. Now, I hope they hear this and I hope they pick the ball up and run with it, because I guarantee you that if they don't, somebody else is going to do it.
Yeah.
And eventually they're going to be looking at that somebody else and going, God, why didn't we do it? And it's probably the answer is, oh, we didn't want to lose our job. God forbid we try to do something different. And they're going to fail in that regard.
This is,
in my opinion, I'm going to go out here.
Yeah.
This is, in my opinion, the savior for the WSL.
I like it, dude. Stake your claim. I think that Fantasy Surfer Magazine's own entity is the one who would do it. I don't know that the WSL is the right entity
to do it.
You're
absolutely right.
Because there's conflict of interest.
Exactly why the NBA teamed up with FanDuel.
Exactly.
There is some separation there, but they can get all the viewership out of it.
But Fantasy Surfer is also the original fantasy surfing club.
Right.
And they've been doing it the longest. This is their opportunity.
My movers and shakers over there have been disappointed in the lack of attention given to the Fantasy Surfer and fantasysurfer.com site. And if you look at it, you know, every 3 years they might do a facelift. They might change the color on it or something, but
it's the same old
site. Well, and they are totally dropping the ball here.
And they've never had any competition until last year when WSL, formerly ASP, introduced their Fantasy Surf League or Surfing League. And I prefer using that new platform, actually. That one is easier to use. It's more interesting to look at. It's fresh.
It's not old. Old software.
So I've been using both, but I prefer the new one. And so now they have a fire lit under them and that there's
competition. Well, I can guarantee you there will be competition. There is going to be a web developer that goes, dude, I do this all day long. I'm going to make something that blows doors on fantasysurfer.com.
Yeah.
And we're going to be the one where, guess what? You can come here and make some money.
Yeah.
And go against your friends. And guess what? Every single round.
Yeah.
Round one, make money.
That's
round
the
two
key.
And three, make money.
Yeah.
Round four, and the WSL is going to see the one that's doing the best, and they're going to hitch their horse to it. And it's going to be a great thing for the WSL. It's going to be a great thing for Samsung. It's going to be a great thing for all their sponsors. It's going to be a great thing for you and I.
Yeah.
It's a win-win-win. And all you got to do is look at the NBA and follow their model, or the NHL, or Major League Baseball.
That's the thing. Now the model's already built.
Exactly.
We just follow.
Yeah.
Don't need to reinvent the
wheel. No need to lead the market.
So here's my question to you is, you've been playing Fantasy Surfer for some time now.
I helped create Fantasy Surfer over at Surfer Magazine.
Oh, did you really?
This was a long time ago.
Holy
This was
cow.
When like everyone was on dial-up.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
Who would have known that it would become...
Well, look, in its iteration now, I didn't really have anything to do
sure.
with it. But the idea, because I was playing fantasy baseball at the time, and we were all playing fantasy baseball.
So here's
why don't we have fantasy surf?
Here's my question to you. If you had started betting money back then, all through the years until now.
Betting money or
I'm sorry,
playing with?
Cash for cash money.
Cash for cash.
Right. So if you started investing into the fantasy surfing thing from day one, would you be up now or would you be down now over the years? Would you have earned more or would you have spent more?
You know, I would probably have lost more.
Would you have?
Because I hadn't given it the interest. Like when you're just playing because it's like office pride
and
there's no dollars on the mind. I'm not giving it the kind of attention that I would give it if, oh, you mean every round I can win $100?
Sure.
You know, like.
But even without your full attention, you still are on the losing end, you think?
I will say that last year, my league that I'm in on Fantasy Surfer now pays out $100 for each event.
Right.
I won one event out of what, 9 or 10 events?
And how much do you put in?
$100.
At the beginning? Oh, so you broke even.
Yeah, put in $100 at the beginning.
So you broke even.
Yeah, I broke even.
See.
But the entertainment value
of course,
is through the roof.
Of course. No, I'm not questioning the equitability. I'm just wondering like, are you winning or are you losing?
I'm a winner.
Are you in the red
I'm claiming
or not?
I'm a winner. I'm an emotional winner. I'm in the red emotionally.
I'm wondering what my track record looks like. I think I do okay, but I don't know if that would translate to profit or not. I never come out like in the top 20%. I'm probably somewhere in like the 30 to 40%.
Well, there's a real secret to playing the game correctly.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I even know what it is, but there are guys that know what it is. And I think it has to do with when you pick your 8 surfers, 4 of them have to be in the top side of the draw and 4 of them have to be in the bottom side of the draw, right?
Of course.
But I think that in rounds 2 and 3, they reshuffle based on seedings.
They do.
So a guy that's in the bottom half of the draw could end up in the top half of the draw based on the reshuffle.
Sure.
So you really don't know going in if you're going to have
the guys you thought were in the top half of the draw end up in the top half of the
draw.
Now, I'm not sure about that. That's the one thing I've always had a question about. Like,
they do, but you wouldn't want to pick, let's say,
eight guys in the bottom half.
Not necessarily. Like, you wouldn't want, let's say, Sippo and Mick Fanning.
Right.
On,
opposite ends of the spectrum.
They're on opposite ends of the draw, but they could very well get pitted against one another in round two if Mick were to lose round one and Sippo would.
Right.
Because the top seed versus the bottom seed sort of.
There's a fine line between middle of the road guys, the $8 million, $6 million, $5 million guy. If you stack your team with those guys, are you going to be better than if you stack it with highs and lows?
Yeah. Interesting.
Well, funny thing, last fall, I reached out to the head guy at Source Interlink at Surfer Magazine. I was like, hey, I want to talk to you. I've got some big ideas. And this was one of the ideas was, you know, we need to change the way we're doing things at Fantasy Surfer. But he never got back to me. He said that he was going to get back to me. Mm. And I kept reaching out to him and going, hey, you know.
Yeah.
And he never got back to me. And it's unfortunate. It doesn't surprise me that Fantasy Surfers dropped the ball because – you know, those guys, they look, I'm not going to sit here and beat down on Surfer Magazine, but I think I've made my case that it's going to be exciting when somebody does step up, and it's going to happen. It could happen mid-season if it's not already happening.
Well, if listeners want to be on the early end kind of getting ready for that big change, they should join our club going into Snapper. Did you watch the Australian Open of surfing?
No.
Going into Snapper?
I didn't.
It's the equivalent to our U.S. Open of lifestyle here that we have.
No wonder I didn't watch it.
Chloe Andino won.
Happy waves and skateboarding? Or
pretty much. But Chloe Andino won and Laura Enover won.
Yeah.
And it was highly contestable. Like, the waves, they weren't crappy. I mean, they're crappy for our, you know,
world. What is it, at Manly or something?
It's at Manly.
Yeah.
But it was the best waves they've had at Manly since the beginning of since they started doing the event.
Yeah. Good Australian beach break.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I was really impressed by the surfing overall, and it got me super psyched for the Snapper event. There was some incredible.
I sent you a link to the Snapper cam. Did you watch that?
No.
Snapper was firing yesterday.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
So Coastal Watch, my friend Ben Mattson runs this site called Coastal Watch. It's the surf line of Australia. And I just was checking out their Snapper cam yesterday afternoon, which is like, you know, 9 in the morning their time. Mm-hmm. And it was looking so fun. And I'm sure it was just crappy by their standards, but it was 4 to 5 feet. And the bar looked good. And the guys were ripping. And you could see them setting up the scaffolding for the event. So, yes, I'm excited about the Snapper event, too. And quite frankly, it looks as if there's some talk that there's so much swell in the water that it might beat the bar down.
Right.
And it might move a lot of the sand down to Kira, and we might see an event at Kira.
Which we would love to see. Those are the best events. So, yeah, there's a lot that could change because the event starts, I think, on the 28th. So a lot can change between now and then. But it's looking flawless at the moment for sure. So I'm excited. The one thing I'll point out about the surfing at the Australian Open was, because it's a beach break, you expect guys to come out and fling massive airs and for those aerialists to do really well and to get scored the highest. But to be honest, there was some incredible power surfing going down that was being scored as high, if not higher, than the airs. And Chloe, who ended up winning the event, had the perfect blend of both aerial surfing and power-based surfing. And that made me feel great in the direction that the judges are going, I guess, where it's like, if they were strictly scoring the power, Freddie P's power surfing, then it might be a step back. They scored it highly, but when somebody incorporated an air into the wave, that got scored the highest, you know? So I just thought everything was on the right track. Everybody looked great. Freddie P, by the way, looked phenomenal. The best that he's ever looked. I put him on my Snapper team.
Who is on your Snapper team? I'd like to know, what are your thoughts on Snapper going in from a fantasy surfer standpoint? Who are you picking? Who do you see doing well? By the way, a caveat to that, I've also heard that it's important to pick your team with a real sense of discretion at the beginning of the year, because more or less you want to hold on. You don't want to be trading guys in and out because you're going to lose value.
Right. This is the first time ever that I did not put Kelly on my team at the beginning of the season.
Oh, that's a good thing for me. I'm glad you said that.
You put him on?
I've got Kelly on. I like Kelly because he's like number four.
Yeah.
You know, he's a good value. You know he's going to be there. He's also hungry. It was interesting. This was the first preseason that we never even really talked about him retiring.
Right.
Like there was never any discussion. Right. He was just all of a sudden he's, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like there was never
because
any.
Because he's not going to retire in fourth place. He's going to retire on top.
Well, that's the hope, right?
We started this conversation 6 months ago when I said, I hope Gabriel wins so it propels Kelly to compete for another 5 years.
That's, you know what I mean? Right before you started singing the Brazilian national anthem. I do
it
recall
was.
I do
right.
recall that.
That's right.
That's sad.
So this is the first time I've never put Kelly on my team. I love Kelly, but I'm just not feeling it right now. I got John. I got Julian, who I think is in form. Felipe Toledo, which I'm questioning my, you know, if it's really good, Kira, I'm kicking him off the team. If it's small and windy, he's staying on. Freddie Patachia as my one goofy footer. Matt Banning, who I've been singing the praises of for 2 years since we started this show. Dusty Payne, because I needed a low-priced guy.
He's a great value.
And Mick Fanning, I think, is going to make a run for it.
All right. Well, that sounds pretty solid. I mean, I would suggest to you that Matt Banning's rookie season, he's probably in for...
Rude Awakening.
Yeah. I think it's tough to pick a rookie...
Yeah,
that
I do
does
too.
Good, you know.
But I hitched my wagon to him 2 years ago.
All right,
so
you can ride the emotional wave into bankruptcy. That's fine. But I'm not a big fan of picking rookies. There's always one that shines each year. There's obviously a rookie of
last
the year.
Last year there wasn't.
Yeah.
Both the rookie of the year last year got booted off tour.
Who was it?
It was Deion Atkinson, I believe.
Yeah.
Him and Mitch Cruz both were the rookies, and they got booted.
How can you be rookie of the year and get booted off? Like they shouldn't even have it. That's sort of like embarrassing.
He charged at Chopu to a third place, I think. That warranted it.
All right.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than a billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
What's your team?
My team is John Florence, Kelly Slater, Owen Wright, Julian Wilson, Dusty Payne, who's a great value at 3-5 based on what he did in Hawaii, and he's sort of come back. Adam Melling, CJ Hobgood, who's like just CJ at $3 million is an insane value because he's so friggin' experienced.
Right.
Like, going into an event at Snapper, this is probably his 13th one or 15th one or whatever.
Right.
And it's not, he's like, whatever, I've been doing. Or can you imagine if you're Matt Banning and you're going up against CJ Hobgood, you're just like, oh shit. Well, this is my first.
Match up so badly so that we can like settle this dispute.
Okay. There's no dispute. Matt Banning's
a
rookie.
There is a dispute.
And CJ Hobgood is an experienced guy that's proven his salt throughout.
See,
Jeremy Flores. So I got CJ. Okay. I got Jeremy Flores, which I don't like. I have problem putting him on my team. But for I had a $3 million pick. I had to pick somebody. Now, could I throw Dane Reynolds in there right now as a wild card? And I'll tell you what. Here's my thoughts on Dane Reynolds. Normally, 9 days out of 10, I'd say keep that guy off your team. But now that we know that Dane Reynolds is pregnant, and now that we know that Quicksilver's sort of toiling, and now that you get the sense that it's about this time in his life when he might change gears a little bit. He's got a mouth to feed. He's got a kid to look after. He's got a wife to deal with.
Yeah.
He's got a future that doesn't include Quicksilver. If it does, he
may or may not.
Yeah, but he probably doesn't even want it to, because they're sort of on the outs, at least culturally. Could this be the fire underneath Dane Reynolds' feet that gets him to go, you know what?
fire in his increasingly sized belly.
Now it's time to, you know, get the Coors Light going, lose a few pounds, and make a name for myself in the competitive arena.
Yeah.
All of my heroes, Kelly Slater, Tom Curran, have been world champions.
Mm.
I'm assuming those are his heroes.
Mm.
You think they are? Tom Curran and Kelly Slater?
Yeah, for sure.
So those guys have been world champions. Now it's my time, being Dane Reynolds, to step up competitively. Now, we've proven he can be competitive. I mean, he was in the NSSA as a kid. He's not just some guy that's never put on a jersey.
He made a lot of quarters when he was on tour.
Exactly.
All the time.
Exactly. So it's just a matter of focus, right?
But I love it. I hope that he returns to form. I'm not convinced that he can even.
I'm not either, but I'm saying to you that if he's going to, it seems like all this of the stars are aligning for that to happen.
I agree. And especially if it's pumping Kira, I think he would do really, really well there. But I will say that I've seen him surf, not in person, but just the last few weeks, we've had a lot of swell in California. Rincon's been firing, and there's been footage of him surfing Rincon and some of the beach breaks in that area. And he's not looking that great, dude. He's blown out a couple huge turns and a couple huge airs.
Is he big, like you said?
He's a little bit big. A little bit. Not more than in recent years.
Right.
More than when he was on tour, for sure.
Yeah.
But does one big turn occasionally, and that makes the internet. But the other stuff that I've seen of him just does not look that sharp. It doesn't look tack sharp like it used to. So I'm a huge fan. I want to love him, but I can't help but notice he's not the old Dane Reynolds that we all love. But he is an alternate in this event, right?
Yes, 100%. He is. He's an alternate, and he's available right now to put on your team. So the question
for 1.5 mil.
Do I put him on in place of Jeremy Flores, who I think is done, but given the rest of the $3 million guys, he was my best choice.
Yeah, probably.
Dane Reynolds instead of Jeremy Flores, because I'm thinking, why not?
Yeah.
You know, because interestingly, you'll notice from my team, no Brazilians. I have no Brazilians because I think Gabe Medina, a lot of pull on him from the media. A lot of people want a piece of him this year, just like they did at the end of last year. It could wear on him.
Right.
You know, there's always a little bit of like a letdown after you've won a world title. Yep. Not too many people go back to back.
I agree.
Everyone's gunning for him, not the least of which are some of his own Brazilian
absolutely,
you know, cohorts, including Felipe Toledo.
Yep. That's been my question.
And Adriano. So,
and Adriano's coming off injury.
I think Gabe's going to fall back a little bit. I'm not saying he's not going to be in some events and surf great, but I just sense that there's going to be
a little bit of a hangover.
Hangover.
World title hangover.
Thank you.
Yep. I agree completely. I that's been my criticism or question about Gabriel all along, is there's a tremendous amount of energy and momentum going into this world title. What it takes to sustain being on top, I don't know that he has.
It's the kind of thing you can do when you're 8 and 9 years into the tour.
Yes,
when you're like, you know, there's guys that go back to back or guys that veterans on tour.
I agree. And the people who are gunning for first place right now are so capable, more capable than ever. The John, the Mick, you know, Kelly.
And again, so. I think there's Brazilians that are chomping at the bit now that the gate's been blown open by Gabriel. I think there's a lot of Brazilians that are like, I'm going to take down Gabe.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
Well, let me ask you this. Not to make this show all ASP talk, but you posted stuff about WSL not having an umbrella sponsor for this year yet. Samsung isn't fully signed on. There's a number of events that are unsponsored still. The Brazilian event just got dropped by Billabong, so Brazil doesn't have a sponsor. J-Bay doesn't have a sponsor still. And then talking about maybe a pay-per-view option that somebody was floating around.
Right. Well, Trax Magazine did an article about 18 months ago about the sort of sour state that they assume that the WSL is in financially.
Got it.
And part of that discussion was just like, Look, if they're as bad as we think they are, and they're not really sure that they're in a bad state, but if you look at the landscape, they barely have one sponsor and the Red Bull fiasco. And
right.
So they assumed that then the only other option is a pay-per-view format.
They just floated the idea. Nobody was actually pitching.
No.
Got it.
And they just floated it out there. And again, this was an 18-month-old article. But for whatever reason, they reposted it on their homepage. Mm-hmm. So I picked it up as something fresh. And I sort of ran with it on my social media, on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And it got a lot of coverage, a lot of people chiming in.
I saw there was like 150 comments.
Yeah.
I didn't even want to chime in because I didn't want to get attached to that.
Oh, yeah.
Get notifications every 2 seconds.
Well, I think Jim Moriarty, the former director of the Surfrider Foundation, kind of summed up my feeling of it, which is, look, there was like 150 comments. And there was a lot of haters. Like, hell no, I'd never pay, you know? Right. But what he's saying is, and this is Jim Moriarty, and I'm quoting Jim here. He says, I say yes. In fact, I say we're already saying yes to paying for content. This is a business model question. Do we want a free service with lots of ads and interruptions and ad placement, et cetera, which is the Hulu model? Or do we want B, which is free with all of those same attributes, the YouTube model, which is free, but there's ads underneath it and whatever? Or do we want, either way we pay with that. Nothing's free. For some reason, many of you think our time is free, that it's worthless. And I don't. In fact, it may be the most valuable thing we control. YouTube, the free option that many pointed to above, made over $1 billion last year on our attention and our time. So I say, yes, I'm willing to pay. I'm offered a Netflix-esque option at $10 or $20 a year to view all the contests live or on demand. I'm doing that. And that, again, that's unquote. That's a quote from Jim Moriarty. And I sort of am in line with that. I even floated $30. I have no problem paying $30 for a really high quality ad-free option. Now, it doesn't make sense to do that from the WSL standpoint because they're trying to gain eyeballs. They're not trying to trim crappy eyeballs and keep quality eyeballs. And that's why the thing I talked about earlier on the show, the fantasy sports plan, that model where you're going to grow viewership by 40% this year.
Yeah.
Based on stats that they know are proven,
yeah,
that the NBA signed on to, that seems to be the model to gain viewership and revenue.
Here's what I'd like to see. I want to keep the ASP events the same way that they are, where there's ads and we have to sit through the same repetitive ad every commercial break, which is super annoying. But let's leave that. And let's introduce a new pay-per-view option, which is there's a pumping swell headed for Cloud Break. We're going to send Kelly and John, and they're going to surf it for 4 hours straight. We're going to clear the lineup for them, and you got to pay the $30, or maybe it's $10, to watch this four-hour super session. And maybe we even have judges that score their waves, but it's a four-hour event, just those guys going at it. I would pay for that.
I absolutely would, and I think there would be a solid quality, you know, proportion of people that would pay for that.
John gets paid, Kelly gets paid, whoever's hosting the webcast gets paid. We're all paying for it, and the entertainers get paid for their work. Same as the UFC or boxing events or whatever.
And I think eventually, you know, sooner rather than later, there are going to be specialty events just like that. Yeah. And they're going to be underwritten by Hurley and by the big players in the space. That's when all of a sudden Hurley's like, you know what, I am into the WSL. But it's a specialty event. And by the way, I've been crowning for that for a long time.
Yeah. No, you have.
I've been saying, let's have, you know, my whole thing is Kelly Slater's number one. It's like boxing. Who's the number one ranked surfer? It's Gabe Medina.
Yeah.
Okay, well then who wants to fight Gabe?
Yeah.
Let's get him into the ring together. Man on man right now. And you know what? You dethrone him, now you're number one. And it's kind of like UFC almost.
Yeah, we don't want to watch Kelly surf 5 rounds against the bottom seeds to get to the good guys. Let's just
How
go heavyweight.
2.5 hours at Cloud Break with John.
Right.
Doing things over in half a day.
Yeah.
And you just nailed it. WSL nailed it. The fans nailed it. Everyone nailed it. You know who else nailed it? Fantasysports.com.
Yeah.
They nailed it.
Dude, we're the architects FanDuel. Of the greatest surf experience ever.
Well, if the WSL spirals fiscally, as some have said they are, and sadly some seem to want them to fail, and I don't want them to fail. I want them to come out on top.
Yeah, the internet is catty.
Yeah.
And so the internet will say that they want them to fail.
Yeah.
But the individuals behind the keyboards, I doubt, actually want them to fail.
No, I think the popularity of fantasysurfer.com proves that that you know people are into it.
Right.
And can you just imagine if every round, what about after every heat, I could wager against my buddy, not wager, wrong term. I could have a cash for cash what would you call it?
Insider trading, hedging.
I could play a cash for cash game against you, David.
Yeah.
In round one, which would be Kelly versus two other guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and right. I guess the way you would do it is you would take the top seed, and the other guy gets the bottom two.
Oh yeah, how about that? Or how about you're not even watching the event because you're busy, but you get a ping notification from your bank account on your phone saying you just won $100.
Yeah, but we want it to be more than that.
You know, whatever it is.
You and I are going to throw down a grand each.
Right. Whatever it is, it's like, oh, Dusty, the low seed, won. Holy crap. What else you got?
Let's see. Bethany Hamilton.
Mmm.
Bethany Hamilton is pregnant. She's going to have a kid. Her and her husband, Adam.
Her and Dane's kids are going to be besties.
Have announced. What do you mean Dane's kids? Is Dane kid. Having twins?
Kid.
I'm not sure if Dane and Bethany are going to be birthing at the same time.
Right about the same time, dude.
Wow.
Well, if they're both pregnant currently, it's going to be within a 9-month span of one another.
I love the way we talk about Dane as being pregnant.
I heard a rumor mill.
Yes.
First of all, we're becoming known for breaking rumors on this show.
Breaking rumors. It's not hard to break a rumor, let me tell you. Not but much then, research required.
That's true. But then other sites pick them up and then they become substantiated.
By Beach Grit or something?
Yeah. No, but we've posted or we've talked about things that then I noticed these other websites.
Oh, like the Inertia does
that. The Inertia.
That.
We'll have this show today and tomorrow. Three things that we talked about on this show will be on the Inertia or on Beach Grit. You know, with a FireWire situation, but ultimately it becomes substantiated later, so it's not just rumor. But I know the Bethany thing is not a rumor; it's legit, right?
Yeah,
tell me.
Yeah. Bethany and her husband, I believe his name's Adam.
Yep.
They put a thing on Facebook. They're expecting, and I think that's great. I'm the hugest fan of Bethany Hamilton.
Are you?
Oh yeah, she's incredible.
Good.
She is a great human being. Mm-hmm. And on top of all that, she surfs massive pipe that I would never even be seen out in with one arm.
Right.
She's insane.
And stomped that air rotation last year.
That was incredible.
So incredible.
You could argue that she's the greatest surfer in the world.
Could you?
I could.
Hmm. Lay down your argument, dude.
Okay.
John Florence.
Okay.
Let me just counterpoint
okay,
it with
good.
John
okay.
Florence.
John, we're going to tape your arm behind your back.
Okay.
We're going to give you 4 months to get used to it.
Okay.
You're shaking your head like, whatever,
well, because first
dude.
Of all, that wasn't the argument. You said she's the greatest surfer in the world. We didn't take into account any variable.
I said I could argue that. And in my argument.
That she's the greatest surfer in the world.
Yeah.
So she has to go surf against John at your aforementioned pipeline.
With one arm.
You didn't say that.
No,
that's
I'm saying it now. I'm saying it now.
Okay,
first of all,
that's not
what was said. That is part of my argument.
That was not what was said, but I will accept that challenge as well. And especially with 4 months of practice, I think John would smoke.
John also has to strap boobs on. He's got to have boobs on with one arm.
I think we need to also implant zygote
into
his belly.
No more implants.
Well, no, if we're going to make it fair,
we got to put
a zygote.
Right.
And he will be pregnant as well.
Yes.
Junior part two.
Dude, Bethany, I've told you the story. I've seen her paddle out at the most hideous, monstrous Sunset Beach, onshore 20 knot, hideous, filthy, closing out to Chun's, just crap.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And I've seen her paddle out there with one arm, and it was just like, mind blowing.
Paddle, duck dive.
Paddle,
it's insane
duck dive,
to even get in position.
The most incredible
for a wave.
Current.
Yeah.
It wasn't even sunset. It was just some like massive washing machine of 25 foot brown crap crumble. Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't even have looked at it. I've attempted to, and she just did it. Yeah. One arm and surfed good.
No, I'm a huge fan as well. I don't mean to give her a hard time. I got a question or a little segment for you. Noah Dean, right? You're familiar with Noah Dean?
Yeah, Noah's the guy that got drunk on stage at the Surfer Pole and spouted off some stuff about screw the WSL or something.
He did.
Like that.
Yeah.
But then he apologized.
He did apologize. He has the closing section in Kai Neville's new film Cluster, yes, which is an important thing. Like, he's ripping, of course. He did an interview with Stab recently where he said they were asking him basically, what's your life been like since Hawaii, you know, since you said that, F the WSL. And he hasn't had a drink in 2 months. He said he's basically, everything's been a whirlwind the past couple of years, and he's always had a sense of impending doom, like this great ride that I'm on is going to come to a hiccup, or I'm going to hit a hiccup at some point. And he'd been partying a lot. He's always on the road and drinking and just doing the whole lifestyle. But he always sensed, like, I might do something wrong. And he accepts that him saying F the WSL on stage during the Surfer Pole Awards was this hiccup. And he's chosen to kind of reflect on it and take a break from drinking, buckle down, focus on his career. And he's really appreciative of this Kai Neville project. And he's going to just try sobriety for a while, which I thought was super interesting and commendable.
Well, absolutely. I'm stoked for him. And
not a lot of 18-year-old kids who would come to that conclusion.
No.
Because that's not hitting rock bottom. I mean, saying F the WSL isn't rock bottom.
No.
But I appreciate that he's taking a stand on it.
Yeah, I think that's cool. You know, and everybody's bottoms can be different. So maybe, you know, maybe the shame and the sense of guilt and stuff, you know, you could argue that maybe that's all it took for him to kind of change his life. And I'm stoked for him. I think we've all been big fans of his surfing. I never really knew him as a human being until that moment.
Right.
But you got to give him a break. I mean,
of course.
Lord knows how many stupid things I did when I was 18 years old and drunk.
You know,
like, the list is endless.
Totally.
So, you know, I only wish the best for Noah, and good for him, man. And I hope more teenagers see and read what you just told me about on Stab. And
I thought was cool about it was he didn't say I'm committing to a life of sobriety. He just said he hasn't had a drink
kidding,
in 2 months.
He's Australian. I know. You know what I mean?
He just said he hasn't had a drink in 2 months. And the title of the article didn't even have anything to do about sobriety. It was Noah Dean talks post Hawaii and burning too bright. That was the name of the article.
Right.
And but I read that in there. So it wasn't as if, like, Globe and Rusty, his sponsors, are like, all right, how do we spin this correctly? Right. Let's do this thing where he's now on a road to recovery. It wasn't like that at all. It was about other things. And in that article, he just mentioned, I haven't had a drink in 2 months. And that's kind of what I pulled out of it.
Good.
So I'm a fan. Good. I think his surfing's incredible. And a lot of people compare him, his style and approach, to Dane Reynolds. And then people, of course, counterpoint that and be like, he would never be the next Dane Reynolds. But I would like to point out that he has a little bit of that, you know?
Yeah.
So
it's funny if you think about the evolution of surfing style. So if you say Noah is the next Dane Reynolds, or he pulls a lot of his inspiration from Dane, and maybe he looks like Dane, maybe he doesn't, I don't know. Who did Dane look to get inspiration, you know?
Yeah.
I always say it was Davey Miller. Like, to me, Dane Reynolds has a very similar style to Davey Miller, who you may or may not know, but he's an old Ventura guy. He's like my age, 50-ish, late 40s, super red hot surfer, rode Bonzers a lot, from Ventura, as I mentioned.
Miller or Smith?
No, Miller.
Okay.
Davey Miller.
Okay.
Smith is from Channel Island, Santa
Barbara.
No, Davey Miller. So anyway, you know, that's who I always say, oh, Dane reminds me of. And so then it's like, okay, well, who inspired Davey Miller? You know, and you could maybe, I don't even know, I'm just assuming, maybe you argue it's Russ Short, you know, from Silver Strands, Oxnard area or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Who knows? But it'd be interesting to be able to chain that all together.
Yeah, there's always a blend of different styles involved, you know. Interesting. What else you got?
A surfer, Japanese surfer, was fatally attacked in Australia and killed by a great white shark. A large 13-foot great white shark killed Tadashi Nakahara, who was 41 years old, surfing off of Shelby Beach in New South Wales town of Ballina. and tore both of his legs off. And his friends tried desperately to apply tourniquets, but the loss of blood was too great, which is usually how people die from shark attacks, is that femoral artery gets snipped, gets severed, and it's just the stuff just, the blood just flows.
They had two deaths in I think 24 hours or 48 hours or something. And then they canceled a day of competition at, I think, the Burton Pro because of shark sightings as well.
So. Yeah, there's been a, I don't know if it's been an increase, but there's been a lot of shark sightings in Australia.
Yeah, super sad.
What about Tuhiti Huamani, the pro surfer from Tahiti, who was injured really badly at Gums, surfing Gums, just the side of Pipeline?
It happened the morning of our last recording, I think. We talked about it a little bit.
Yeah, I heard from some friends of mine in Tahiti that that there's really a lot of hospital costs that need to be addressed.
Right.
And some were suggesting that maybe his sponsors should cover that.
And I think, have they set up some sort of a Kickstarter?
I think they have.
I got an email from a listener who's a Northern California transplant living in Honolulu. And he's actually had some insight into this. And he said that it's just super tragic and it's a super serious injury, but he can't be more specific due to HIPAA compliance. I think that this listener might work in healthcare. And he basically said that he's questioning surfing without protection, basically. And is it like playing the lottery? Big wave surfing can be worth it, but when you have a family that you're taking care of, you got to question the risk of the things that, you know, guys like Scion and even Shane Dorian, who's got a family, things like they're doing. And you see guys on the North Shore with helmets sometimes surfing at the shallow reef breaks. A lot of the McNamara family wears helmets. And the question is just like, with this situation, could it have been prevented if Tahiti had a helmet on? And if it could have been, why don't we see more guys wearing helmets?
Yeah, you know, it sort of just comes down to personal responsibility, you know, like it's a dangerous sport. Surfing's always been dangerous. That's part of its draw, part of its allure. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, could more people wear helmets? Sure. People don't like wearing helmets. It's a little bit restricting.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, it's interesting, you know.
Are guys not wearing it because it's not cool? Is that the only reason? Because it's not encumbering.
I don't know. I mean, you'd have to ask them, right? I'm not sure. I used to wear a helmet all the time.
California or elsewhere?
No, in California for like three years. And I wore a helmet every single session for a long time. And I never had hurt. I just did it based on a close call that I had one day.
What was the close call?
I was just surfing down the line and some guy on a longboard just bailed his board, and his longboard came back at my head at such an incredible velocity and rate of speed, just barely missing my head, that if it would have hit my head, I would have been dead. And it was enough to make me just go right to my car and go buy a helmet.
Really?
Yeah. And I wore a helmet for, like I said, two or three years, no matter what, winter, summer, spring, fall, I wore a helmet.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing that there aren't more injuries, actually. Especially when you see some of these wipeouts where people just get tangled and it looks like they could easily land on one another's board or whatever. And people come up all the time and just paddle opposite directions and don't get hurt.
I know. I had a couple just this, you know, we've had a great run of surf here in California for the listeners. And most of us are surfed out and we caught a bunch of waves in the last week and 2 weeks. And I had a couple of run-ins like that, you know, where situations where I popped up and couldn't believe that the other guy was okay. His board might not have been okay.
Right.
But, it is. When you think about it, and we used to discuss this at Surfer Magazine a lot, like relative to how many people are in the water around the world every day, there's relatively few accidents and, in fact, few deaths. Like when you think about how many people are facing 12 to 15 foot surf in Hawaii right now this week.
Yeah.
You know, like people just. It's a pretty safe sport all in all.
Yeah.
You know?
It's shocking how not more people get injured. Interesting. I have a question or just kind of something for you, philosophy to kind of ponder and get your insight on. They did this event here at Shack last weekend, right? Opening a new exhibit. And I had some friends come to it. And one of them, who had never been here before, who's a listener of the show, came, and he was blown away by the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center and all the boards. And there's a lot of these old wooden hot curl boards from back in the day, some of the first surfboards ever shaped and built. And he was overwhelmed by the vibe of surfing from back in the day, and kind of Duke Kahanamoku's ethos of, like, I'm going to spread surfing around the world. The more the merrier, you know, come participate in this amazing thing. And how different that is from our modern surf experience, especially in Southern California, where you paddle out, and if there's other people, you give them the evil eye and you try to get waves to yourself. And it's just such a far departure from Duke's ethos, you know? And he was just kind of reminded of, like, wow, I should really embrace more of that original spirit of what surfing was. And then I got another, that was one thought that I had one day. The next day I had a comment on our website from somebody named Justin, who was talking about watching those Fergal Smith Ireland videos. And one of the things that Fergal talked about was, look, when it's small, I ride a bodyboard because I surf these slabby, wedgy waves that there's too much, you know, curvature in the wave to really surf with a shortboard when it's that small. I just bodyboard it and I have a blast. And this guy, Justin, was saying, like, that's awesome. We have this ride anything movement. Why aren't people more open to actually riding anything, like bodyboards or even stand-up paddle boards people don't really ride? There's this kind of, I don't know, bigotry that exists in surfing where it's like, if you're not doing what I'm doing, then we can't be cool. Even if you're doing what I'm doing, I'm still going to give you the evil eye and try to get waves, you know?
Yeah, you know, first of all, obviously it's really crowded here in Southern California, so, and there's a limited amount of resource waves rolling in, and at the good spots it's crowded, and so, you know, you get that, but you bring up a great point. You know, I often say to myself, how would Duke react if he was here today in 2015, you know, surfing at Newport or whatever? Like, mm-hmm. would he have the same aloha spirit?
Right.
We don't know.
Yeah.
You know, you like to think that he would. And there are certainly people, surfers in the water that have captured and manifest that same spirit that Duke had back in 1920 or whatever, which is aloha and, you know, give and share and stuff. And you get a lot of that at places like San Onofre.
Sure.
You know, where it's way more... Duke's spirit does sort of live on there.
Right.
And then there's just these highly competitive arenas like Swami's or Newport or wherever, Rincon, that sort of the ego and the pride really take center stage. And that speaks to why we don't just ride anything. You know, if we rode anything, we might not look cool, and therefore my ego would be damaged, and my pride would be hurt because I'm not doing what is status quo, which is cool. There's a lot of ego and pride involved, and, you know, it's one of the most self-centered, pride-oriented, ego-filled activities in the world. Surfing.
I know, which is the opposite of what Duke was.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
It's come such a long way.
Well, it's quite a paradox, isn't it?
It is.
And I'm sure that back then there was guys surfing right alongside Duke that were like, hey, look at me, man. It's all about me,
sure.
You know? And that's one of the reasons that Duke rose. He's the cream from the crop, you
right.
know? So he rose to the top.
So here's my question to you, though. If you pulled up at one of your local beaches and let's say the waves weren't ideal for surfing, but maybe it was shore break and it would be really rad to bodyboard.
I would hand plane. I have a hand plane and fins in
that
my truck at all times.
Okay.
And what a great workout. And oh, by the way, you only need 15 or 20 minutes. I only need 15 or 20 minutes swimming around with fins on before I'm tuckered out. And I got an insane workout and I'm back to doing, you know, my daily activities,
right.
my responsibilities that need to be taken care of. So, and if it was a boogie board, more power to me,
right.
you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
I'm all about that. I think it's a great idea. And I think there are some surfers, especially down where I live, that have that same mentality.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Interesting food for thought. I just thought a couple of those things overlapped in my life in the 48-hour period, you know? that I thought were interesting and worth discussing.
There, many times you can pull up to a spot. Maybe you've been in this situation where you pull up, the waves aren't very good, but you're like, I got to go out. I just got to get wet.
Exactly.
And that's a great opportunity to just find a spot that's got a powerful little 2 to 3 foot beach break. An opportunity for you to body surf and grab your hand plane or your boogie board.
Or just body surf.
Just go get wet in that instead of having to, I'm going to go sit next to this grumpy guy and not really get any exercise.
Right.
And have some guy give me stink eye and go, blah, 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 you know. And it's like, maybe I catch 3 waves of which none of them were any good.
Yeah.
Or I can just be on the inside swimming around hooting and hollering, getting little tubes.
Yeah.
It's way better use of your totally. Time and your energy, and your stoke level is going to go through the roof.
Like a kid again.
Yeah.
This guy, Justin, on the website also posted a link to an article that Stab Magazine did, which was called 5 Things That Bodyboarders Have Taught Surfers. I'll read the 5 things to you. Number 1, finding waves, which is that example of like Chopu, some of those slabs in Australia. Bodyboarders were riding those waves long before surfers because they fit into the wave a lot better. And they don't have to stand up, obviously, and make a drop. Number 2 was not blowing them out. Bodyboarders are notoriously good for keeping the secret, you know, and hiking into a spot and parking their car a mile down the road so that people don't know where it is that they're surfing. Number 3 is fashion. A lot of the bodyboard wetsuit brands incorporated color into their wetsuits long before surfers did. Number 4 is ride anything, which we already kind of talked about. They have no shame in their game. And number 5 was actually humility. Bodyboarders tend not to be as boisterous as a lot of the surfers, I guess, in the lineups where they share waves like Pipeline in different places, that bodyboarders are a little more humble than the surfers. So
cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. You know, I've got some Kelly Slater news. We can't ever do the show without a big chunk of Kelly Slater news.
I've been waiting.
He's all over the place.
I love it.
11 world titles and 11 under par at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. So I don't know if you saw Kelly Slater playing golf this weekend at Pebble Beach. So the weather was gorgeous. The golf course looked great.
It's like a celebrity Pro-Am event?
Well, no, it's a professional event, but it's the one where they do have a Pro-Am attached to it. So Kelly played with a professional golfer, a guy, Siam, a guy I've never really heard of. And I'm probably butchering his last name, but it's Siam, Marcel Siam or something like that. But anyway, he and Kelly Slater teamed up to shoot 11 under par. At one point, they were in second place. I think they finished fourth, but I could be wrong. But Kelly was there on Sunday, the final day, playing golf, which for a Pro-Am team, they really cut it down to like the top 10 teams by Sunday. So he got to play all 4 rounds there in that gorgeous weather. So congratulations on the golf. And then I see here that Kelly Slater and Kevin Ansel, who's a great artist and a really cool guy, they are collaborating on this thing called The Pod, and the hashtag is The Pod, and it's their way of paying tribute to the world captured in captive orcas. And there's a press release out here. They're basically trying to do their best following up on the blackfish thing that CNN did around SeaWorld, basically trying to promote the health and well-being of orcas around the world.
Yeah.
And The Pod. Hashtag The Pod.
And specifically what The Pod is Kelly Slater's quiver of surfboards that we saw him riding throughout the whole winter in Hawaii has this artwork on it. And it looks like an orca, basically. The outline of the board looks like the outline of a whale, obviously. And there's a lot of black with just the white parts not illustrated that show the eyes of the orca and the white parts of the whale, obviously. But the black portion is just a repeating writing of people's names who have died surfing. Sion Malosky, Todd, so one board is all Sion's name repeatedly, and that makes up the black portion. The next board is Todd Chesser. The next board is Mark Fu. You know, and he's got this whole quiver of friends who have died in the surf. And Kevin Ansel is the artist who implemented this. I don't know who came up with the idea, but Kevin did all the names on all the boards. And I guess all the boards are on display at a hotel in Waikiki. So you can go look at the boards.
Yeah, the Modern Hotel Honolulu says here February 13th. I hopefully it's still available, but
it is, I think.
It started February 13th at the Modern Hotel Honolulu, the Sun Suite Terrace in on Ala Moana Boulevard. And the Ruka guy, PM Tenore, is it? Or Tenor? I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah.
Pat, is that it? Pat?
His name's Pat, yeah.
Anyway, I'm butchering his name. I apologize. But
the guy that started Ruka.
Yeah, the Ruka founder. This, I believe, was sort of his brainchild along with Kevin and Kelly. So it's definitely a Ruka thing because Kevin's sort of a brand ambassador for Ruka.
Right. And that Pat Tenori guy is not only the founder of Ruka, but the co-founder in Perps with Kelly.
Oh, really cool. I want to try that stuff. I haven't. We need to get some in here and drink some during an episode.
Perps would be the perfect sponsor for this show.
I would like to be a fan. I want to taste it and see how it goes down. But as long as there's no, and I'm sure it doesn't have any of that high fructose corn syrup or any of that crap in it.
That's the whole thing.
Yeah, I want to get some. Where do you get that stuff? I guess I could look online for it.
There's a place in Huntington near me that sells it.
I'm going to check it out. Have you had it?
No. Waiting for them to sponsor the show, dude.
I'll buy a case of it. If I can get a case of it somewhere and just buy it online and bring it in here and we can...
I'll pick it up.
We'll sponsor ourselves.
I'll bring it to the next show. How's that?
I hope I like it. I want to be a fan of it because I'm a fan of health drinks.
And of Kelly, of course.
Yeah.
Do you have musty moments and Kooks and Dukes and all that jazz?
You know, I don't. But,
okay, I got one for you.
Go ahead.
Musty moment. I was watching the Australian Open of Surfing and one of the competitors... that I was so impressed by, but I've watched him for years and I've never brought him up on the show. We've never talked about him. Nobody seems to talk about
him. Are you going to claim him right now?
No, I don't think he'll ever qualify, but I love his surfing. His name's Heath Joski.
Uh-huh.
Real powerful surfer. I was reminded of this footage. I'm going to turn my computer.
I think I've seen this.
Is it Bells Beach?
No.
Okay. Heath Joski surfing Bells Beach.
Is he a big guy?
2 years ago. He's not a huge guy. But just watch the lines this dude draws at Bells Beach. Power surfer. Looks like freaking Tom Curran with a giant beard, but he's a young bloke.
He's a big guy, though.
Sponsorless. I mean, he's not giant, but he's a bigger dude.
Yeah. Because I saw some recent footage of him, I think at Kira or somewhere.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember where.
Well, Heath Joski's his name. This video, it's 2.5 minutes long. It's of one heat that he had at J-Bay 2 years ago in the QS event. He gets a 10. Look at that bottom turn, dude. How sick is that? Looks like current. So on this next wave, I think it's the next wave, he gets a 10 on it. In the middle of the wave, he sole arches a high line. Like in the middle of doing a bunch of turns and getting barreled.
Good.
He gets this high line section and just puts his hands behind his back and sole arches.
More people should do that.
In a heat.
I know.
In a QS event.
That's what the wave
it's
called
so
for.
It's so rad. It was. Exactly.
Dance with the partner.
And they gave him a 10 for it.
Good.
But not for the sole arch.
I'm officially a fan. I don't know who this guy is, but I have seen footage of him recently. You know, they've had an insane run of swell on the Gold Coast.
Oh, yeah.
And there's some footage of some sandbar. I think it's Stratty Island. Or who knows? It could be Green Mountain. It's just some mental session. And it's Mick Fanning. And there's a couple waves of him. And I don't know where I saw it. I'll try to find it for you. But okay. I'm a fan. I'm a big fan. Although I will say that he didn't look so good at the sandbar relative to Mick Fanning. Like they showed like four waves of Mick Fanning and then they showed Heath and you're like, oh, bring back Mick.
Yeah. That's the thing. I don't think Heath will ever qualify, but this surfing, when you see him where he should be surfing, like points, like J Bay, it's undeniable. The kid just rips. And again, rad to see a young QS warrior surfing like this.
Yeah.
Not even trying to do an air.
I don't even think he's a QS warrior. I just think
he has been. I've been following him for years.
Oh, okay.
So he has been. Look at this thing. Oh, soul archer.
That's the perfect move right there. Good
really
for him.
Is. So that's my must see moment. The footage is 2 years old, but again, I was reminded because I saw him at the Australian Open of Surfing. And he actually did really well. I think he made it to like round five or the quarters or something
cool.
like that.
So he is involved in the QS on a
He is, but he's sponsorless, and he was saying, like, dude, I can't afford to do this. I'm here because it's Australia, and if I make some money, maybe I'll go to the next one. So from the archives, that's something for you to look at on surfsplendorpodcast.com. My Duke also comes from the Australian Open of Surfing. This is a goofy-footed, unsponsored Tahitian who surfed his way to second place.
Wow.
Yeah. His name's Matea Hikwili. He took out Mick Fanning twice. He beat Mick Fanning in a non-elimination round, and everybody was like, well, that was amazing, but, and Mick was on point, too. Mick was surfing well, and this kid beat Mick. And they go, well, that was interesting, but it was a non-elimination round, so Mick probably didn't bring his A game. They got matched up again later in an elimination round. He smoked Mick again.
Wow.
This kid's unreal. He's like a 19-year-old Tahitian, goofy-footed surfer, pretty good English. he actually entered the event, and then his parents, there was a mistake where his parents emailed the event organizers and said, hey, he's nursing this injury. What's going to happen if he can't compete? You know, do we get our money back or whatever? The event organizers thought that they were withdrawing him from the event, so they took his name out of the event. The kid flew to Australia, showed up for the event, and goes, hey, my name's not on the draw. What's up? They go, oh, we got this email from your parent. There was a misunderstanding. Now he's an alternate. So the kid flew to Australia, was put on the alternate list mistakenly, waited his turn. Thankfully, a couple, I think Dylan Perillo or something, didn't show up for the event. So he got bumped into the event where he should have been in the first place, surfed all the way through to the final, beating Mick Fanning twice, rags to riches story, and it's unreal. He was an amazing surfer. That's my dupe.
Cool. Very good.
Want to hear my kook?
Sure.
My kook? I'm ashamed to say Beach Grit is my kook this week.
Oh, my.
What
did they do wrong? They were your best friend.
They're our friends, dude. But I got to call them out for a little hypocrisy.
Uh-oh.
Chas Smith penned an open letter to Graham Stapleberg / the WSL because...
He doesn't like him, does he?
No, he doesn't.
That's too bad.
So in this open letter, he's asking why... the WSL pulled a heat on demand of Chaz and Paul Evans, where they were commentating the Swatch Women's Pro event. Chaz and Paul Evans were in the booth commentating this event, having a grand old time, drinking beers, saying whatever came to their mind. It became an internet sensation. It got more views than any other heat, of course.
Sure.
And people were watching it repeatedly. Like, people said, like, hey, I've watched this heat 5 times because it's so hilarious. Well, the powers that be took down this one heat. They took it off the website, forbidding people from watching it in all its splendor. Well, Chaz pens this open letter and it's like, dude, what's up with you guys taking this thing off? You know, let the people see it. The people want to see it. Well, the reason why they're my kook is a day before Chaz posted this, Beach Grit had posted 2 interviews with Dane Reynolds, audio interviews. They were 1.5 hours long, much like our beloved podcast platform here. Hour and a half long audio interviews with Dane Reynolds. I listened to the first one. I was looking forward to listening to the second one. When I logged on the next day, they were vanished from Beach Grit's website.
Why?
That's what I want to know. Okay. Everybody has their master. I have a feeling they published. No, I think Dane might have.
I just said that's not cool.
Well, the interviews were from a couple years ago. It seems like they recorded the interviews to transcribe them into text for Stab back in the day.
And they just sat in some Derek Riley's desk and they found him a couple weeks ago.
I think Derek's came across them and it's like, hey, these things are really cool. We should post these on our website. They posted them and I think Dane probably said, hey, man, that wasn't cool. That wasn't supposed to be an audio interview. And Dane was talking about money and Quicksilver and some stuff that could be seen as controversial. Mm. And they got pulled from Beach Grit's website. So my kook is just like, hey, you guys are complaining about the WSL pulling down your interview or your thing, yet 24 hours later, you guys are pulling down something that you originally posted. Everybody has their master.
All right.
Dane was their master. But I do love Beach Grit. And by the way, I like that they're posting audio interviews now. They've done a couple that are really good. So.
It could be a thing that where, you know, Dane agreed to talk to Derek, but it was off the record, or there were certain aspects of the conversation that were off the record. And Derek didn't respect that, or they posted it without editing the audio file.
Yes.
And so they said, you know what? I got to, you know, Dane's calling me and he's right and this is wrong.
Totally.
Whereas with the WSL thing, somebody gave them the go-ahead to do the commentary, right?
Right.
It was a WSL Women's QS.
I'm not sure what it
whatever was. Whatever it was. But somebody said, you're good to go. Turn on your mics. You're good to go. Just, you know, be careful.
Right.
And it was fine for a long period of time.
Right.
And now it's not fine because I guess the WSL and Chaz are at odds.
Right.
So it's kind of apples and oranges, the thing that you're arguing about.
You're questioning my kook?
I am.
Dude, everyone, you didn't even bring a kook. How's that for hypocrisy? The ultimate hypocrisy. No, I love Beach Grit anyways, but we're cool, but I was
just
shocked.
You know who
shocked.
My kook is?
Me.
Yes.
Oh, shocking.
My kook is you because you sent me an email
a
couple weeks ago saying, hey, I've got a Skip Fry. A friend of mine's got a Skip Fry who wants to sell me. And And I go, yeah, you know, that thing's worth about this amount of money.
Yeah.
And I end up getting an email from the same guy saying, hey, guys, I've got this skip pry.
That what? How's that a kook move?
I thought if he was addressing both of us, maybe I could be in on purchasing. I would have loved to have bought that skip fry.
Well, you still can.
No, he sold it to he sold it to Bird Surf Shed for $750.
Oh, that's a smoking deal.
I know. I would have bought it for $800.
Well, his mistake then. Here's the thing. He emailed me asking for a price. I wasn't sure, so I emailed you and said, what's the fair price? I'm thinking of making an offer. How's that a kook move? You're just mad because I got the email first.
I am.
Beat you to the punch, dude.
I just felt like you could have said, hey, a listener contacted me. But you didn't know he contacted me, though, did you?
I mean, that's irrelevant to me, even if he did or didn't. I just said, what's the fair price for this? I'm thinking of making an offer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I guess if I would have known that I had an opportunity to bid on it, I would have said, you know what? I'm going to make him an offer.
Well, I'm not going to offer you something that I want to buy. You
figure it out for yourself. I would have said, just figure it out for yourself. By the way, speaking of that,
yeah,
I do want to mention that we do have the Vintage Surf Auction coming up in September in Los Angeles. It's to benefit the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center here and the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation. And if you've got a really nice surfboard that you think is worthy of being in the auction and you want to put it on consignment and sell it at the auction, I'm certainly interested in looking at it. Bear in mind, there's only going to be about 40 boards in this auction and we only take top shelf stuff. So this isn't like, you know, your $1,500 surfboard. This is like your $8,000 surfboard, you know? So if you've got some nice stuff, you can certainly figure out a way to get a hold of
me. How do they get a hold of you?
Probably scott.bass@surfingheritage.org.
Wow.
scott.bass@surfingheritage.org. if you got a board, send some pictures with some insight, but don't send any crap. We're only interested in the high-quality stuff.
You laid down the gauntlet, dude. No crap.
Well, and, you know, because, I mean, you'll get a flood of people going, hey, I got this old long, you know, but you never know. Some of that stuff is a gem and people don't know about it too. So
I got one closing thought. There was one review left on iTunes this week from Island Brian, who said a lot of nice things, gave a 5-star rating, but his closing comment was, quote, the show is refreshing and often reminds me to keep my good karma in check, unquote. And I thought that was really interesting and nice. Like, among the things that we do on this show, I don't expect it to inspire people to keep their good karma in check. But I thought that was worth sharing with you
because
it warmed my heart a little bit.
It warms my heart too. Yeah. And you should, and we all should, you know. I think the world needs a little bit, a big dose of humility. You know, humility is that state of being in a teachable place, you know, to be able to listen and to learn from everybody and to not let our egos and our pride move us away from that, you know, and that's a constant struggle for me. And I think it's probably a constant struggle for a lot of us. And, you know, we claim progress rather than perfection.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, man. Should I get us out of here with some music?
No, you should just say goodbye. I don't want to hear the Allman Brothers today.
Oh my God, that is so wrong. How about this? Howlin' Wolf. I guess that's it for the show, David.
Yes, it is.
Email, surftalksandiego@gmail.com. And you are?
Hello@surfsplendorpodcast.com.
And we'll be back here in a couple of weeks, which will probably be right around the start of...
Yeah, Snapper.
The Quicksilver Pro at Snapper Rocks, the Gold Coast.
I think it should be a couple days into it.
Yeah, so get your fantasy surfer teams geared up.
Yeah.
And our club is
Surf Splendor.
Just do a search for Surf Splendor.
On fantasysurfer.com.
Now, David and I, we're going to have a little bit of a bet going. At least you
agree.
And I. You and I got to have some cash on the table.
Let's do it.
All right, so what, like $100?
We'll figure it out.
All right.
I don't think it needs to be cash. I mean, I'm cool with cash, but it could be something, I don't know, a surfboard or something.
we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
All right. So until next time, 2 weeks from now, adios and aloha.
All right. Thank you, as always, Scott, for co-hosting the show.
And thank you, listeners, as always, for tuning in. I also encourage you to check out everything that we discussed in today's episode. It is all on SurfSplendorPodcast.com. The Dukes, the Kooks, all the videos, links to the actual articles, everything in detail. So check that out, waste some time there. And then, of course, you can continue this conversation either on our website or on social media, where you'll find us at Surf Splendor on Instagram and Twitter and, of course, Facebook. And that's kind of a cool way to share the show as well. You can tag other people in our post, repost our things on your Facebook wall, whatever. That helps your friends to find the show. All right, I believe that is all. I'm working on a really kind of cool episode for next week, so I will leave it at that, but encourage you to tune back in Monday, Tuesday, early in the week, and I'll have that posted for you. All right, thank you as always for tuning in. Until next week, this is your host of Surf Splendor, David Scales, saying shred on. Please.